Eason Nasiwa.
There's a lot of pride in playing in Europe for Leinster. You know, it is the one to win for the Champions Cup. You know, we were short last year, and it's about us as a club raising our standard and, you know, getting back to the finals that we want to be in.
Kano and Scarlets, yeah, can't wait. You know, it's the best club tournament in the world, one that I've, you know, enjoyed watching growing up and obviously playing in over the last 10 years or so. It's a fantastic competition to be part of.
Dimitri Zaleski, en 2016, on a réussi à se hisser jusqu'en finale de la Champions Cup. Donc on a envie justement de donner le meilleur et de montrer la véritable image du Racing 92.
I'm Peter Romani. Europe is hugely important to Munster. Obviously the history we have with it. The guys love playing at the highest level of rugby and the intensity, you know, the teams you come up against, that's why you play the game, isn't it?
We're down to four, and triple title-chasing Saracens are not part of that quartet.
It'll be Leinster looking to make memories of their own as we go forward in this season's Champions Cup. The defending champions are out. Leinster will take their place in the semi-finals.
So Leinster march on unbeaten in the competition this season and now face La Rochelle's conquerors, Scarlets.
Davis, brilliant. Scott Williams chasing across.
Yes, Scarlets first for 11 years. Meanwhile, a cracking Conway try helped Munster trip up Toulon at Thomond Park.
We knew history said that they would probably win, and history means something here. But this was about the modern day Munster overcoming injury setback after injury setback and coming back in the most memorable of fashions to win it with that Andrew Conway score.
Munster now face Racing 92, who got the better of Clermont.
There's Carter again, off the floor it goes to Machinot. Chance for an overlap here. Thomas brings it back inside. Racing 92 are going for the kill. It's Machinot, it's out wide, and it's in the corner from Palu.
Former Scarlet scrum half Mike Phillips and ex-Munster man James Downey join us to preview the Champions Cup semi-finals. We hear from Leinster linchpins past and present in the shape of Dennis Hickey and Eason Athewa. And we review on Racing 92 from French journalist Leo Faure. There's a very quickfire Q&A from Munster skipper Peter Omani and match-winning memories of the 2001 final from Leicester legend Leon Lloyd. Plus, Dom Waldock, Conrad Smith and Stefan Armitage look ahead to the last four in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. And David Humphreys makes his selection in the EPCR European Player of the Year 2018, presented by Turkish Airlines. That's all to come on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Welcome to our semi-final preview. It's James Burridge alongside ChampionsCupRugby.com's Emma Thurston and Tom May, once of Toulon, Northampton, Newcastle and England. Guys, I'm going to shake it up a bit at the start. We've got four semi-finalists. I'm going to give you five facets of the game, which we talk about endlessly on this pod. And I want you to give me one team from those semi-finalists you think, I suppose, that, you know, the prize category. So let's start with attack. Who has the best attack out of our four semi-finalists, Tom May?
I will go for Scarlets. A fairly obvious answer, I think. Right. Do you want a reason why?
Not really. Well, no, go on.
No, I just think they're pretty good at seeing where the defence is, both in set-piece play and open play.
Emma?
I agree with Tom. Scarlets, high-tempo rugby looks good.
Defence?
Munster.
Racing.
Set-piece?
Racing should be.
Munster, definitely.
Breakdown?
Leinster.
Leinster.
Kicking game?
Leinster or Munster.
You can't have two. You got all the way to the fifth and final one and you had to screw it up.
It wasn't me this week either.
I'll say Munster.
Right, God, you're a barrel of arse, you are. Emma.
Leinster.
Right. So, but there again, those are the five, which I think are probably going to be the areas where these games are going to be decided. It's difficult to see what else is going to be a big factor in this. Maybe experience that match-winning mentality. What, I mean, Tom, you've been in situations where so much is on the line. Give us a player's view.
Well, I think when you look at the two semi-finals and you see that Munster and Leinster are on either side of that, that they've both got massive experience at this stage of European competition, as have the Scarlets. But it's been a while, hasn't it, for them since they've sort of reached this point with the form that they've got. Racing, OK, they're in France, but they're down in Bordeaux. You know, I wonder whether that experience will be lacking. Probably, you know, Leinster and Munster, out of all of those facets of play, they managed to pull them all together and combine it with a real understanding of actually what's required to win.
And looking back at those quarterfinals, can you quite believe that Saracens aren't in the competition anymore? I mean, getting the triple would have been astonishing. But the fact that they're not in it, you had two huge heavyweights in that quarterfinal at the Aviva. The best team won on the day, though.
Yeah, you know, Leinster blew Saracens away, didn't they? I thought if there was one team that probably could have pulled it off, that would have been Saracens, and that's why I actually backed them to do that in the Aviva. But, you know, Leinster have been outstanding this season and certainly through the Champions Cup. So, you know, it's going to be strange, I think, seeing a semi-final stage without Saracens there. But I think the teams that are there are fully deserved.
And if you're a romantic, Emma, you would have loved the fact that Parky Scarlett was buzzing, it was full, they had additional seats. It really set up that Easter weekend brilliantly. And maybe conversely disappointed with La Rochelle, because we were talking them a lot, like everybody was. We loved the rugby they played, but it's a different beast when you get to the knockout stages, isn't it?
It really is. And you just spoke, well, we just spoke there about experience. And I think La Rochelle's inexperience showed a bit in that match, and their discipline let them down. And all of a sudden they're trying to clean their act up and chase the game, whereas they were acting freely at the beginning of the season. And let's not forget, for La Rochelle, this is their first season in the Champions Cup. It's not bad to go out at that stage after their first season.
Tom Nakarawa, for me, has never disappointed. I know we'll talk about our dream team later, but he's always come up trumps. And that try, I think, for me, is probably the outstanding one of the tournament for me. I mean, we've had the Scarlets one against Bath, plenty others as well. But were you surprised that actually Racing beat Clermont in the way that they did?
I was a bit, because I thought Clermont, you know, they clearly stuffed all of their eggs into one basket, that being the European one, and were backing themselves to get through that fixture at home. I just think form leads into these competitions within Europe, whether you're doing well in your domestic competition or not. I think when you go back and you have a look at the Scarlets-La Rochelle game, well, that's two teams that are going in completely opposite directions. La Rochelle dropping like a stone in the top 14, whereas the Scarlets are on really good form. You take out last weekend. But then also, you know, you look at Clermont, they're right down the bottom of the top 14, but then Racing, you know, they're batting right at the top. So it's difficult to just switch on and switch off. And I think that's probably where Clermont were really struggling that weekend.
And one person you could accuse of switching off was Trandouk for Toulon at Thomond Park.
Like, they had that in the bag, and I actually thought that one of my away wins was going to come good. There were three things there that Trandouk did wrong. First one was to miss the touch. You know, don't get greedy, just knock it out and slow the game down. They would never have gone back and scored then. Instead, the kick chase went upfield, they missed the tackle, and Trandouk almost tackle avoidance, running away from him. And then about 2 minutes later, he tried to force an offload, turned the ball over, gave the ball to Munster, game dead. They had that there for the taking.
And can you tell me what it's like when, I mean, I know you've been a 10 yourself, so you've felt this on both sides. If you fail to do the bread and butter right, i.e. kicking to touch and just taking the pressure off, you must get a lot of heat from your teammates.
I don't think necessarily your teammates at the time. You can probably tell there's a fair few people looking at you.
Which is worse.
Certainly the crowd, you know, and probably the coaches as well. You know, messages coming on in various different forms. I think players are all very, very well aware of when they've made a mistake and when they're trying to force things. And certainly that period of play for Trandouk was an absolute stinker. You know, he was actually picked the next week for Toulon, which was quite surprised me. But really, that was their European competition. They're riding on that kick, wasn't it?
Emma, social media, it's getting interesting. Plenty of opinion now, but, you know, there are only four contenders left. What is everyone saying?
Well, we've had plenty of comments and reaction, including Niall, who has something to say when referring to people saying that Munster have been lucky. He says, what about Munster's domination of Toulon's line-out? What about Munster destroying the Toulon scrum? What about Scannell and Arnold putting the brakes on Nonu and Bastereau all day long? What about Andrew Conway slicing Toulon to bits in 7 or 8 seconds of pure genius and guts? Write us off at your peril. On any given day, in 80 minutes of rugby, Munster can punch with any heavyweight.
If we're going to talk about reacting under pressure and adapting to what's in front of you, then Conway personified that, didn't he?
But yeah, you can't take away from Conway what he did. And, you know, he scored a great try. But it would have been a lot better if actually people almost looked like they were trying to tackle him. You know, that
like you're tackling
exactly.
after a long weekend.
Yeah.
I've got to get you on the...
That's a bit harsh.
I know, we'll start as you intend to go on. accountability, you two, because neither were particularly hot when it came to your predictions. Now, Tom May, you went for Clermont, Saracens, Toulon and Scarlets. You got one out of four. Emma, you got one better. You got Clermont, Leinster, Toulon and Scarlets.
Well, I would have got two, but it was Trandu that lost that for me.
Right, so the poor chap's got you on his back as well as everybody
you're
else.
You're giving the heat now.
Definitely.
What about the semi-finals, though, Emma? Because I mean, you've been asking plenty of questions this week on social media. Which semi-finalist has impressed you the most this season and why?
We've had a lot of answers. Connor's commented on Facebook, Leinster look a step up from the others. Scarlets will be tough, but it's getting hard to look past Leinster lifting that trophy. Whereas Paul, he's of an entirely different opinion. He says Leinster have peaked already, Scarlets haven't. I thought Scarlets forwards schooled their opposite numbers at times for all their size and physicality. Scarlets against Racing 92 in the final, no doubt. And just to remind you, we're at Champions Cup on Twitter to share your viewpoints and European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook. Plus it's ER Challenge Cup on Twitter and European Rugby Challenge Cup on Facebook. So Paul's not in any doubt of a victory for Scarlets in Dublin, but the history books do say otherwise when it comes to teams not holding home advantage. 28 of the 44 European Cup semi-finals to date have been won by the club with home country advantage. So a quick bit of maths, and that's 64% success rate.
Love a stat, love a stat. Right, next, we're going to preview two huge semi-finals in the Champions Cup when you'll hear from Mike Phillips, James Downey, Ethan Athewa and Dennis Hickey.
Hi, I'm Ronan O'Gara and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Right, we're going to start with the first semi-final between Leinster and Scarlets. It's on Saturday, the 21st of April. Leinster skipper Ethan Athewa says his side have real desire to go all the way in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, we've got a real motivated squad, really hungry. You know, a lot of guys coming off the back of a Grand Slam come back in and add another level of intensity and hunger to the team, you know. And we're a strong squad. You know, there's a lot of guys that missed out on playing tonight that would have been itching to be there, so... Yeah, the hunger's huge. It's a tough pill to swallow, losing in a semi-final like we did last year away to Clermont. You know, that's etched in the back of our head and something we, you know, don't like feeling and something we talked about a lot in the off-season to learn from, and it's knockout rugby. There's no chance to make mistakes in it, so we're happy to be in the semis.
Ethan Athewa talking after Leinster's victory over Saris in the quarterfinals. One of the best overseas signings I think Leinster have ever had. A real talismanic figure. But both these sides, Tom May, have lost in the preceding week in the Pro 14. Leinster to Benetton, Scarlets thrashed by Edinburgh. There is a massive caveat here, obviously, that not everybody was playing. A lot of players are rested. I get that. But does it just, you know, make you question the emotional state of these teams?
Not necessarily the emotional state, I don't think. I think when you get back your whole, you know, your frontline players with a real focus on what is a massive game, then I think that the last week is forgotten. Really interesting, though, that, you know, Leinster can lose...
to Treviso?
Yeah.
At home?
Yeah. I think the stat that really stuck out for me, and they made 15 turnovers, or had 15 turnovers against them. That's a horrible stat to have. And if they have that against the Scarlets... There's no doubt that the Scarlets will be licking their lips, because turnover ball is the best ball to attack from, and the players that the Scarlets have got in that back line will really look to try and expose them.
But if you look at last year, and I think we've talked about this before in a previous pod, it is about getting the emotion right at this stage in the competition, because they were outthought by Clermont a year ago and that lingered, and equally against Scarlets in the semi-final of the Pro 12. So how do you judge getting the emotion right for such a big match?
It's pretty weird, because I think as a player... You say, oh, no, it's just another game. You know, we'll just take each step as it comes, break the game down into little 10-minute blocks, little 5-minute blocks, whatever you want to do. Win each of those blocks and you'll start to get a number of them put together. Anyone else that's outside of that, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, emotion must be going through the roof. As soon as you get inside the change room, it's all about trying to calm everything down, trying to make everything as almost as normal as it can be at such a stage with so much at stake. And I think probably... we come back to that European experience with Leinster and the guys that have, you know, that they were just mentioned, having come back from the Grand Slam, the intensity that they played with Ireland, coming back into Leinster, that is boding well for Leinster this weekend against the Scarlet side.
Everyone's talking Leinster up. They're saying that trophy is there for the taking. What will get Leinster into trouble?
By allowing Scarlet space, because if you allow them space, they've got some incredible players that can pick you apart. Hadley Parks is probably the informed centre in Europe. Rhys Patchell is a great player, whether he's playing at 15 or 10. Steph Evans on the wing, you know, they've got guys that can really expose you. James Davis, the link that James Davis plays between the backs and the forwards, I think is really crucial and can, you know... There's almost a step difference, isn't there, for a lot of sides when they're carrying up front and then they go out wide. Actually, with the Scarlets, they can carry, but then they can turn that into a full-on attack, which is a great aspect of play that they have at their advantage.
Right, Emma, let's talk Scarlets as well here. And Stephen Jones is appearing in a lot of the press at the moment. I know there's a lot of talk about Wayne Pivac as well, but Stephen Jones is the one that fascinates me because I think he did one interview the other day where he's talking about variety, being able to go around players, through players, over, and you think getting the kicking game right. But actually, that's where they've come unstuck. And they haven't always thought of a plan B or a plan C. And they're probably going to need it against Leinster, aren't they?
I think they are. And you do need those multiple options. And I think that's where we'll need to see Scarlets having developed and having learnt from those matches where they haven't shown that. Those matches where they've lost because they've not been able to fall back on something different. And if you're ever going to show this, then you have to show it in a semi-final week and you have to show it against the best opposition. So they need to take those learnings from the training paddock and transfer them in the most emotional of occasions.
And a lot of it, Tom, is about managing people. Who do you think is the best at that? When you've got Leo Cullen, Stuart Lancaster, wow, well, he knows how to manage people, doesn't he? He's learnt the hard way. But equally, you see what Scarlets are doing. Pivac has proven he's a master here too. So how difficult is it to manage a talent? Because you're probably not training much this week, are you?
No, I think pretty much after Christmas, your training load starts to taper off. And the amount of training you do on a week-to-week basis disappears towards the end of the season. It's all about getting those finer details right, the analysis right, really finding little areas, because that's all it's going to be, little areas in either side that you can pick apart with certain aspects of your game. It's not mass change. It's not saying, right, we've been doing this for the past 9 months, now we're going to go and try and change and do something else to try and pick apart Leinster, for example. That doesn't work. It's all little details. Managing people is one thing, but I think, you know, you look at both management and coaching setups and they are real quality that I think are comparable. I think it's actually going to come down to those big decision makers on the field that's going to make the difference.
Well, let's get another view on the match from the former Leinster winger, friend of the pod, Dennis Hickey.
It's going to be a fantastic game. I think Scarlets, you know, they've contributed to 10 of the Welsh side of Scarlets. They're the form team, certainly in Wales, and probably form team in the Pro 14. They play a really good brand of rugby. They develop really well under Wayne Pivac and Stephen Jones. And they've got a lot of players who are just playing the form players in Wales this year. That's why they've been so successful. That's why they're so dangerous. Guys like Gareth Davis, I think in particular, the scrum half, is just a fantastic player. And he's playing with such confidence. But throughout their side, they've got players who are performing week in, week out and playing a brand of rugby they like. And I think they certainly aren't going to come to Lansdowne Road, to the Aviva, with any fear. They came here in the semi-final last year when I don't think they were given as much credit as they should have coming into that match. And they really put Leinster to the sword with ease that match. And they went on to win the league. That's not going to happen this time. I think there's a lot of respect for the strides that they made and the type of rugby they're playing. You know, it's their first semi-final in a long time. That'll weigh on them because it's added pressure for those players who haven't found themselves in that position in a while. But this is a team that plays with a lot of confidence. And, you know, they're going to be looking forward to that fixture, thinking this is a game that we can win. And that's why it's so intriguing from a Leinster perspective. I think Leinster will have to be at their absolute best to win that match.
That's Dennis Hickey there. Tom May talking about the big game mentality you have to have. And whilst the Scarlets have demonstrated it plenty of times, you know, a semi-final like this is a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tough for everyone. When they get to final stages, all the little details make such a massive difference. And I wonder whether actually the details side of it might be the downfall potentially of Scarlets this weekend. I don't know. Their attack is clearly a main part of their game. And they're in form, they're bang in form. So, you know, they'll be looking forward to this semi-final, but I wonder whether the detail's there.
Well, let's speak to somebody who knows them extremely well. Former scrum half at Scarlets. He's played for Racing in a final, of course, Wales and the Lions. Mike Phillips is on the pod. Mike, thanks very much for coming on.
Hello, how's things?
Good, good. Great to have you with us. Mike, you must be relishing looking at this one, I think, because there's just so much expectation because so many Scarlets fans have been waiting 11 years for a moment like this.
Yeah, they have. I mean, it's great to see, and it's great to be a part of it. Back in November, I got called up, got asked by Steve, really, if I could come back and help for two games coming out of retirement. So that was quite nice. It was quite nice to finish off where it all started for me. So it was great, actually, to be with the current champions, to see the behind the scenes and get to know all the boys and the coaches and see how it all works and how it all unfolds. And I was just really impressed by the whole setup, really, and the atmosphere, you know, the spirit they got in the camp. You know, you hear of it and the teams talk about it, but, you know, I was there and I, you know, felt it and I could see it. So, and I just texted the boys. I spoke to Rob Ebbs tonight. I said, you win Saturday and I'll play the final then. So, happy days.
I mean, you talked a bit about it there, but few have really got to find out what Wayne Pivac is all about. I mean, we know about Stephen Jones, your old mate, and a lot has been said about his coaching style. What about Pivac? Because now, of course, he's on the radar for Wales when Gatland leaves, and many think he is the reason that the Scarlets have become so galvanised now.
Yeah, I think so. I got a chat, got to know him, and just a great guy. He talked about getting rid of a lot of deadwood when he first came there, and he did that. You know, some tough decisions. He's backed himself and he's done really well. You know, the way he's influenced the game, it's this open, so this positive nature, and it's, you know, backing the skills, which is implemented by Stephen Jones. And yeah, you know, he's done a great job. He definitely should be the next Welsh coach because he's seen all these youngsters coming through with the Scarlets. There's so many of them now in the Welsh team. It just makes sense to me for him to go on to a national coach now. So you can tell straight away that he's a genuine guy. I got on really well with him, and you know, huge respect for him, what he's done, and you know, hopefully he can, you know, keep going now towards the end of the season.
Mike, if the Scarlets are given room, then there's no doubt that they're one of the form teams in Europe. But Leinster, they pride themselves on their defence, on the work at the breakdown. If they have that chance to slow the ball down, do Scarlets have a plan B to go to, do you think? Do those key decision makers have enough of a management style on the game to really almost push their side around the field?
Yeah, I mean, Leinster against Saracens at the breakdown were just ferocious, when they just blew them off the park there in that field. And at the end of the day, rugby is about that. So it comes down to the physicality, really. You know, you can play all the flashy stuff, but, you know, you need that physicality, the breakdown. Scarlets do have great guys over the ball. They've got some serious athletes, but they're probably more of a ball-playing team, aren't they? So that's a big challenge for them, whether they can match them physically at that breakdown area. And if they can do that, then they've got every chance. I mean, they beat them last year, you know, so there's no reason why, you know, they can't. You know, they've got all the skills in the back line, the way in which they marry together, their backs and forwards. It's just superb to watch. So, but it's about that physicality, like you said, on the breakdown, which Leinster are so good against Saracens with.
Because Scarlets have been found out in the tournament already in that game at Bath really early on in the campaign. And I remember watching one of the Pro 14 matches against Munster, I think it was. And again, Munster targeted them in the pack. And that's surely where Leinster will want to target, because they know that even though they've got a lot of that Welsh pack playing for the Scarlets, Mike, that is possibly their Achilles heel?
Yeah, maybe so. But that game was in horrendous conditions, when it was raining. If it's a dry ball, with Scarlets, we wanted a dry day, a nice dry ball. And if that's the case, then they got it up to tempo. Gareth Davis at 9, just get those quick cuts going, get that high tempo, that ball in play tie really high, offloading game with the forwards. All their forwards can handle the ball really well. We've seen that given Six Nations. Rob Ebbs is like a number 10 on the field. Loose prop, you know, so high tempo. They need a high tempo game. They need to run Leinster on the park, you know, to give them a good chance of winning, really. But yeah, you know, Leinster are so organised. They've got Sexton there pulling the strings. I know him really well, and they need to try and get into his head as well, try and get him on the floor and rattle him a bit. But yeah, it's all building up to be, you know, an epic game, really, and hopefully it'll be this open, attractive game of rugby, which hopefully the Scarlets can come out on top on.
Mike, who are the characters then in this Scarlets team? When you're in the changing room, when you're mucking about during the week, when you've had a good training session, Who's the one with the banter? Who's the one with the jokes? Who's the one who's keeping that changing room buoyant?
I'm certainly there for 2 weeks.
Two's enough for us. It's more than Tom May and I have been in.
It was the best 2 weeks of the season so far, apparently. So
yeah, that's what they tell us.
James Davis is a massive character there. He's in the middle of everything, and you know, I've seen a sort of different side of him as well. He's a definite leader as well, and I think the boys really want to play for him. I know he's not a captain or anything, but the boys really respect him. You can see that. That was so evident, really, to see. And just how they all get on really well. I think there's a good spirit. When I was there, a lot of, obviously all the international boys were away, but it shows how good a squad is when your main players are gone, and then what's left is really the, you know, the heartbeat of the team. And, you know, James Davis is in the middle of everything, and they got some really good people there now, I think, looking after him as well. And Stephen Jones, T-Vac, good backroom staff. You know, they all get on. There's a great spirit there. And, you know, it was just great to see and good to be part of, really, for a couple of weeks.
Mike, just switching over to the other semi-final, if we can. Obviously, another side that you know extremely well, Racing 92 and Munster. A couple of outings together this season already. How are you seeing that one taking shape in Bordeaux?
That's going to be another cracker, isn't it? I mean, I think it's just the size of the Racing pack is massive. It's huge, physical again, and they've got X-Factor across the park, and you know, even on the bench. I think you know, when I was playing in Racing, you know, our bench was full of international players, and I think that could be a major factor as well. So this depth in the squad, I think maybe you'll prove a bit might be too strong for Munster, you know, even though they'll have the character, they'll have, you know, maybe full of passion and playing for that jersey as they always do. There'll be huge support for them. And I guess, you know, they will be more disciplined than Racing. I guess when you're talking French rugby, it's the discipline really that lets them down every time again. You know, it's whether it's national team or club wise, it's always comes down to discipline, making silly mistakes, giving away silly penalties. If they can do that, just be disciplined, you know, I think Racing will be a bit too strong for Munster again.
Mike, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
So that's Mike Phillips, great guest to have on the pod for this semi-final edition. Emma, social media then, because the fans have been getting quite excited, getting in touch with us. And we asked the question, which semi-finalist has impressed you the most this season and why?
And Pat said, Leinster, most dominant all-round performance. It's theirs to lose, in my opinion. And Andrew, he's been telling us that he's on the way to the Aviva this weekend. He said, Scarlets have a toughie, no doubt about that, but they know how to win out there and will have no fear playing well themselves. Looking forward to it. Got my flight sorted for me and my boy, so we'll be there to support the boys in Scarlet and mix with the supporters in blue. Looking forward to a great day in a great city, our first trip to the Aviva. So he's going to be making his first trip. But Leinster, well, they've played 4 tournament semi-finals at the venue, formerly Lansdowne Road, obviously. They've lost 3 of them, and their one win was against Toulouse in 2011.
And the fact that Scarlets have beaten Munster there, Tom, when you know you've played well on a big occasion in a big stadium, how big a shot in the arm is that?
Well, I think it gives you a point of reference, doesn't it? It gives you something to go back to believe in yourself and to try and remember those feelings that got you over the line that day. You know, certainly a lot of those Irish players would have, you know, they've won well in that Aviva stadium, and they'll be looking forward to it. But the Scarlets players, you know, having done it there themselves, I think, you know, it's all on for a great game this weekend.
So Saturday, the 21st of April, it's 15:30 BST, 16:30 Central European Time, Leinster against Scarlets at the Aviva Stadium, and it's on Sky Sports Action and Sky Sports Main Event, as well as beIN Sports. Tom May, your prediction?
Leinster win.
Emma Thurston?
I agree. And short and sweet.
I think most people do, don't they? Conventional wisdom, if it's worth anything.
Yeah.
Until you go across the bridge into Wales, when everyone will be thinking that the Scarlets will turn them over.
Absolutely. Well, next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, we'll look forward to the other Champions Cup semi-final.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston.
Well, on to Racing 92 against Munster, which takes place on Sunday, the 22nd of April at the Stade Chabot Delmas in Bordeaux. Munster's 13th appearance in a semi-final. It's a tournament record, Emma.
It is, and they've actually been here before. Munster have played 7 away semi-finals against top 14 clubs, including one against Biarritz in San Sebastian. They have 2 wins to their name, a famous victory over Toulouse at the Stade Chaban-Delmas, 31-25, that game finished back in 2000, and a further success against Castres in Béziers in 2002.
Tom May, they're all talking about this as Dan Carter's swan song match. And yet he's probably not even going to start, is he?
No, I think probably Patrick Lambie will start. So it'll be quite interesting to see the lineup that Racing go with, actually. They had mass changes at the weekend against Toulouse, where they got whooped in the southwest of France. They lost 42-27 and they only really got on the score sheet once it gone past 65 minutes and Toulouse had turned off. So it was a sure sign that they had all of their sights focused on this weekend in Bordeaux to try and knock off Munster.
Who are the leaders in the Racing team? Because they're so hot and cold, Racing, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they are a bit hot and cold, but actually they're starting to get some form of consistency together. It's been quite difficult to understand what they're trying to do with their patterns of play at times during this season, but it's starting to all piece together for them. I think Machinot at 9, he's a great leader for them. In fact, whoever they have at 9, because Ira Barron comes on and he adds a huge amount of pace, a huge amount of direction. But you look at their, you know, the players that they've got at their disposal all over the field are ridiculous. You know, they could have 30 internationals if they wanted to. You know, not all of them are fit, granted, but you know, Lambie didn't play at the weekend, Vakatawa didn't play at the weekend, Chavancy, Machinot didn't play. You know, these guys are all massive for them. And when you can bring on the likes of Dan Carter to make a big difference, then what message does that send to opposition?
Well, I was going to compare this with an English club. If this was an English club which has been playing week in, week out in the Premiership, you would have some consistency in selection. But that kind of doesn't apply in France, does it? And so you just have some players just literally being chucked in one week and chucked out the next. You've got no continuity there. Now, is that going to play a part?
No, I think that has been the case over a number of seasons, and there's been a focus from French clubs to win their home games, so you tend to see that the home team is potentially stronger than the away team. But when you look at the likes of Racing, Toulon, La Rochelle to a point, even though they've started to disappear off, Toulouse, the team that is playing away from home is always strong. So you've always got players that can step up. You know, Juan Imhoff, who's probably going to be on the bench at the weekend, was playing in the starting 15 at the weekend at Toulouse. You know, they've got guys that step up and drop out. And, you know, there's a bit of overlap that goes on now. The inconsistency comes from a mindset, I think. It doesn't come necessarily from selection.
Right, we haven't talked about Munster yet, but we can now. James Downey is with us, a friend of the podcast. Jimmy, great to have you on the pod again.
Good to see you, James. How are you?
All good. Thanks for joining us. So give us the Munster perspective, because that was a hell of a win against Toulon. Many felt, probably, I suppose, on balance, it was unexpected. But they're there now. They've got the pedigree. But Racing, they're a different beast to Toulon, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are. I think you've seen how Tom was talking there about kind of the French mentality away from home. And I think you see this Racing team seems to have kind of turned that corner a little bit, and how convincingly they put away Clermont in the last round is obviously going to stand to them. But again, it's a European semi and you're never going to write off Munster, are you? So I just think that Munster have been away for the last 2 weeks in South Africa. Second team to beat the Cheetahs only over in South Africa. So they've had a bit of a kind of team bonder, I think, over the last 2 weeks, really got together, focused on 2 big games, and obviously coming into this big game in Bordeaux, I think it's a huge focus for them. It's the main thing of the season, the way Munster have always gone first. It's going to be interesting to see how the Parisian support will travel as well, because we certainly know in the past how well this Munster crowd will support their team. So it's going to be a big one. They've played against a couple of French teams before, lost to Clermont in 13 and Toulon in 14. So they've been around it. They've lost a couple, but I think now they just have a little bit of consistency. But I just can't see past Racing, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, we'll come on to those results in the past in a moment. I just want to talk about that South Africa trip, though, because on one hand, it's probably been great for team bonding, hasn't it? Because you've been on a tour, it's not really an old-fashioned tour, but there is a real sense of the collective. They've picked up 9 points on the road, which is a fantastic achievement. That said, logistically, how much has that taken out of them, Jimmy?
Look, I think when you get over early, I think it's not too bad jet lag, realistically. It seems to have been an actual PR and a bit of genius work there and there. I think the focus they've gotten over in Ireland has been huge. All the players seem to have put up that they've been seeing all the tour sites. They've done a lot. It's really got, as you said yourself, James, that collective that brought them in together to bond them even more. I don't think it's going to be a concern. They would have had a nice, easy couple of days now this week before they have a real focus. I don't think they need to change too many things. Look, it's just, conversely, we can talk about Leinster later on, but Leinster, like we were talking beforehand, and we were saying that, who'd you take, the Italian teams in the back-to-back or the South African teams? And I just think that it's worked out so much better from on the back of that. And as I say, I wouldn't have been strongly in favour of Munster winning this one, but maybe that might give them a little bit more edge.
Jimmy, did Munster swerve one massively in the quarterfinal against Toulon? And do you think that gives Racing a bit of an understanding about how to topple this lot?
Yeah, I do. I do think they did a little bit. But I do think that with Dunica Ryan, obviously Rodge was there beforehand. They certainly have a bit of insight into how things go with Dunica Ryan there beforehand. And they've played each other already, so they know each other quite well at this stage, Tommy. I just think that Racing just have that little bit extra. They, as I say, they just have seemed to move a little bit away from that French mentality of the consistency away from home, and maybe it's due to the foreign players, I don't know, but I certainly think that Munster will be up against it in Bordeaux.
And Jimmy, you've been part of, I know, in the past of two Munster sides which have struggled in big semi-finals, Clermont and then Toulon. What can Munster take from those defeats? Because travelling in France is never easy, and it's not something Munster have a great record at either.
No, certainly not. I think that the games you mentioned that I played in, I think it was, we nearly left it too late before we actually realised we can actually beat these guys. And unfortunately, when you realise that and you've gotten them on the level pegging, that it's too late. I think that this Munster team will now go in and go, we've got to be confident. We've played them before. We know what we can do. And just really focus on their game and not worry too much about what the French team are bringing. I do think that this is obviously a new team now with Munster and with Jan van Graan there. And I think it's going to be an interesting step up on how he does things, because obviously Asmus put his own impact on things. But I certainly do think that they have the ability to do it, but whether they can, I'm unsure.
And just looking back to the contest at the Aviva you mentioned earlier there, Leinster, that you played for against Scarlets, what's your perspective on the clash? How do you see this one panning out?
For me, this was actually a little bit more clear-cut, to be honest. I think they lost, like Leinster lost to Treviso, which was a bit of a disaster, to be honest. As I said, like Munster had their back-to-back against South Africa, and most players actually thought, oh, we take the Italian teams just to get 10 points under the belt, but Leinster actually didn't play well the last couple of weeks. But I just think that Leinster will have too much now, so how well they played against Saracens, how effectively they put away Saracens, and Sarries have been there and done that. Scarlets is kind of new grain for Scarlets for a while. Obviously they'll know this Leinster side inside out from playing against them consistently, but I just think that even these Irish players who are still on a high from the Grand Slam, you know, it's just going to feed them over the line. And even certain players are coming back in now. And Robbie Henshaw's back training this week, which is great for the Leinster squad. And look, Leinster rested a few players, but they still have their big guns. And look, so the Scarlets, but I just can't see past Leinster.
Jimmy, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much. Enjoy the weekend. I bet you got your fingers crossed.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
James Downey, formerly of Munster, Northampton, Leinster, of course, who's been there, he's tasted it, he knows what it takes. And some players, they only get that one opportunity, Tom, and I'm sure it's playing on a number of their minds.
Yeah, you get your opportunities and you just got to take them. I think once you've experienced a loss at this stage time and time again, like some of the teams have, then it starts to play on your mind. But for these teams here, I think that, you know, that's what makes this so exciting. These sides, you know, they've all got to these latter stages before, and I think, you know, there's a real opportunity for them all.
Now, injury wise, they will be hoping and praying that Keith Earls can play this weekend. He's been out for a while. He could be effectively partnering up with Zeebo and Conway. Now, how important is it that back three is playing for Munster this weekend?
Well, I think Zeebo and Conway add in, you know, fairly self-explanatory things, but I think Keith Earls as a player that's, I guess, fairly miniature in stature compared to some of the beasts that are running around. He adds so much in terms of his contributions around the field, not only with his management and his ability to kick the ball, but also, you know, his running lines, they're intelligent running lines. He's not just trying to cart horse someone and knock someone out of the way, because he can't. He has to be really intelligent about the way he plays the rugby, and that's what makes him so exciting to watch.
Defensively, he's proven it too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's just got a good understanding. He's played in a lot of different positions, which gives you an overall understanding of what other players need in certain situations. It is difficult getting shifted around, and, you know, I speak from experience, but it does give you a bit more of an understanding of what those players around you need and what's required in a certain defensive system.
Right, let's get some French perspective here on Racing 92. Léo Faure is a rugby reporter for Midi Olympique. Léo, great to have you on the podcast.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing? All right, Léo, thanks very much for coming on. So tell us about Racing then. Do they deserve to be in a Champions Cup final?
I think that's a team that is quite mature to be, yes. They've been in the final 2 years ago. They have many, many world-class players. And collectively, they are having maybe their best season since 4 or 5 years. I think it's a team that is ready to go to the final, definitely.
Do you feel sorry for Pat Lamy? Because everyone is talking about Dan Carter, about it, the fact that it's his swan song, that you know he's hoping to add this to his already lengthy trophy cabinet. And yet, actually, Lamy's the one who's starting, and he's the one who is dictating the pace and the outlook of the match.
He's, first of all, having great season for Lamy, and to be fair, I think he will be the guy who will start the game on Sunday in Bordeaux. Dan Carter is just getting better every week, but is he ready to start? I don't think so. You have to take care of Lamby. He's a major threat on the team. Maybe more slow, having a more slow rugby, more kicking game. He's an international player, Springbok, and you can see all that in his way of playing. It's not a weak point of the Racing, definitely not.
Over the season, it's been tough to see how Racing are trying to play at times with their systems. Is it a straight-out offloading game that they go for based around Vakatawa and Nakarawa, or do they have a bit more to their game?
It's based on that. It's a team coached by the two Laurent Travers and Laurent Labitte. Historically, there are two coaches who have physical rugby, not very based on speed. That changed a lot this year with their new stadium, with a synthetic pitch. And their rugby has changed, but it's still based definitely on their offloading. They have Nakarawa, okay. They have the Nakarea, and they have Vakatawa. They make him play in the centre, not on the wing. The Fijian-born player who play with France on the wing, he will be number 13, I think so. And they are all players that can offload a lot. And so it's a very strong base of their game. And that's what you can expect, I guess, on Sunday.
And defensively, Léo, they were hot, actually, weren't they, in the quarterfinal against Clermont? I think everyone remembers that breathtaking try from one end of the pitch to the other. But if they are to really beat Munster properly, they've got to get a defensive stranglehold on this Irish team.
That's true. But you have to remember also that Munster and Racing were in the same group during the European Cup. And the game at Thorn Park, the first game, I think it was 0-0 until the 60 minutes, until the hour of game. It says that Racing is able to defend and have very strong defense. It's not that much anymore the base of their game, but they have massive players physically. They have all the front line, Asatia, Tamaifuna, Sha, what are very strong players. They have this back row also with Laurie and Leroux, who are all very mainly defensive players. I think it's going to be more physical than what we can expect. Because Munster is a team with the winger. I don't know if Keith Earl is going to play, but Conway is a very good player. And they have also very good weapons on the back of the Racing. But first of all, it's going to be a fight, a forward fight. And Racing has many arguments in this.
And just from the perspective of those looking at the performance of the top 14 sides, obviously only one semi-finalist left. Is that a disappointment from a French rugby point of view, do you think, at a club rugby level?
Yeah, it has to be, definitely. Maybe it's just show the rarity of French rugby also. We had four clubs in quarterfinal, but three of them were going out, were playing away. I think French rugby and top 14 is changing a bit his way of playing rugby. We are getting to more speed, but we are not done yet. There's still a lot of job to do on this. And right now in international rugby, I think Ireland is in advance. England is having a poor year globally, but they are still in the place. That says a lot on the job the French rugby has to do globally, not only the club, the French team also.
Léo, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed for coming on again. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you very much, guys.
Tom, who do you think has the most mobile pack? Because you can talk about the back line, but actually these guys are very effective, aren't they, in both teams?
Yeah, clearly Munster have got some big ball carriers. But when you actually look at the way that Racing set up a couple of weeks ago against Toulon at home in the U Arena, they went with Gomez Sarr and Eddie Benarous up front and Camille Schout. They're slightly new addition looking props, ripped props, as opposed to the slightly chubbier
version.
They're young,
they're hungry, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Bernard Leroux, who's a back rower, he was playing the second row with Nakarawa. And then actually you had Laure, Choisinou and Klassen in the back row. So you've got a very, very mobile pack. And as Leo was saying there, you know, they've got an ability and a desire to make offloads. Now, it's easy to point out Nakarawa and Vakatawa, but there's other guys that have the ability to do that. So I think that could be a real asset for Racing. Yes, they've got quality players out wide, but really the addition and the power and the speed and strength that those guys give up front will set the tone of the game.
So, Emma, to the social media chat, because it's been quite extensive in the last few days, which of our semi-finalists has been the question, teams or individuals, has impressed you the most in the Champions Cup? That's the question we've been asking.
It is, and a lot of people have been pointing out teams. So Judith has said, as a Munster fan, I have to be fair and say Leinster are looking the best at the moment, but my heart says Munster. Let's hope for an all-Irish final and may the best team win. Well, David, he's not thinking about an all-Irish final. He said Racing need to make sure that they give Carter a proper send-off. Munster have had their luck, in inverted commas, already. Leinster will walk their semi-final and probably will win the final. So from David's comments to a focus on a couple of individuals that we've mentioned already, Keith Earls and Donica Ryan, well, they were in Munster's matchday squad for the province's last European Cup triumph. That was in Cardiff in 2008. I'm sure a lot of people remember that one. And obviously, after his move to Racing, Ryan will be trying to prevent his former teammates from reaching the final for a fifth time. Now, there's a couple of tickets still available. A few days in Bordeaux certainly sounds a lovely way to spend the weekend, so I'm sure they'll be snapped up and maybe we can take a team trip there.
Tough gig. Sunday the 22nd of April is when this match kicks off at 15:15 BST, at 16:15 CET. That's Racing against Munster at the Stade Chaban Delmas on FR Der, BT Sport 3 and BN Sports. Emma, your prediction first.
A draw going to extra time.
Oh, we haven't talked about extra time.
Would you like me to talk to you about extra time?
Go on then.
We've got to now.
Well, okay, so if the scores are tied at the end of full time, then you get two periods of 10 minutes of extra time. And if it's still level, you go to the team that has scored the most tries in the game, including extra time. And if it's still level, so the teams have the same number of points and the same number of tries at the end of extra time, it's time for a place-kicking competition.
So it's not a draw.
Yeah, that Cardiff-Leicester game will go down in history. When was that, Emma?
2009.
Yep. I remember watching it and just... there isn't a crueler way for a game to finish, is there, Tom, in your experience?
No, not that I've experienced, but I think it's a great way watching forwards having a crack at goal.
You're neutral, though. Imagine if you're one of those supporters on either side.
It's not supporters I feel sorry for, it's the players having to go
through
it.
Obviously.
Supporters probably had a great weekend. If you lost, of course.
See that? They'll all remember props having a crack at goal, or, you know, they've remembered Marty Williams for years, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I have, definitely. Tom, let's get your prediction on the Racing Munster game just to finish, because we haven't got that yet.
I'm going to go for a Racing win.
Don't forget to check out semi-final highlights via championscuprugby.com and the EPCR social media channels. Now, we're going to have a Champions Cup Q&A with the Munster rugby captain, Peter Omani, and memories from Leon Lloyd about his match-winning moments in the 2001 final for Leicester Tigers. But next, we'll hear from Stefan Armitage, Conrad Smith and Don Waldock as we preview the semi-finals in the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
I'm Ken Owens and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
So we've already talked through the Champions Cup semi-finals. We can now look ahead to the last four in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. First up, Friday the 20th of April, it's Gloucester against Newcastle. Tom May, well, you're one of the perfect people to talk to about this. Your old club in the Falcons. Why can they perform brilliantly in the first 40 minutes and switch off massively in the second 40?
If I knew that, I'd be employed by them.
You wouldn't be talking to me.
Because, you know, they have struggled and they, you know, the last game was case in point. You know, 25-0 up and then started losing 27-25. You know, it's something they need to address. And at the latter stages of this season, they need to address it quickly, because away at Gloucester, you don't get those chances very often. Now, they've beaten them on the road this season already, so that'll give them something to go to, but they have to get things right. They're doing well. They're in the semi-final, of course. They're top four in the Premiership. Things are looking pretty good in the North East.
Well, because I asked you this question a few months ago, I think. Can they compete on two fronts? Have they got the depth of squad? Have they got, I suppose, the mental nous? Because we've talked about it, why La Rochelle have gone off the boil. Different case in point with Newcastle, but they are competing on two fronts, and actually they're both as important as each other.
They are, and I don't actually think, you know, when they've changed their players, you know, Sonotti and Gonova haven't actually played too much in Europe, if at all. And when they've swapped those guys out, they haven't lost too much. They try to go with a strong homegrown talent within the European competition. It's served them well. When the boys have been given a chance to take their opportunities, you know, that they've stood up and performed well.
Let's get Don Woldock on the pod. He knows Newcastle extremely well. Don, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
So, Don, can you work out why they're just so inconsistent between halves?
I think the Sale game, there was a couple of reasons for that. I think going 25 points up is always tough to stay on as a team and keep producing what's got you to that 25 points, I think, sometimes. And also the style of Sale, they're a team that just sort of clings in there, holds on, and you're a tough team to really kill off. I think you saw that the previous week against Wasps, where Wasps went 12 or 14 points up and then Sale came back to win that game. So we're always going to come back into it. But I think, you know, the boys showed great character to win that game.
Tom, I know you've been a big fan of the work of Dave Walder behind the scenes. Dom, do you agree? Do you think he is one of the key reasons why they have been consistently performing this season, though, over an 80 minutes? I know we've talked about how they've blown hot and cold, but, you know, top four of the Premiership at the moment, and they're in a semi-final.
Yeah, I think we pose probably one of the most potent attacking threats in the league. We've got very dangerous runners out wide, and we get them the ball in space very regularly. So I think Dave's had a huge part to play in that. But I also think the role of Wellesley and Mickey can't be undermined either. So I think it's a combination of the three, but certainly Dave's been outstanding, I think.
And Dom, Kingsholm's not somewhere that you're going to fear going now this weekend, having won there on the road already. Is that going to be something that you refer back to in your previews in the build-up to this game?
Yeah, certainly. I think you get to understand the style of play from a team, and also the winning at away from home previously in the season at Kingsholm is going to be huge in terms of getting that result. So I think an understanding of the team as well as confidence in being able to win at that ground is huge.
And what have you made of Gloucester this season in terms of how they've performed both in the Premiership and then in their quarter final against Connacht?
Very well. I think they're up within touching distance of the top four, which is a big improvement on last year. Again, they're a very dangerous team, particularly in their work in the outside channels. Mark Atkinson has been in outstanding form recently. I think he's going to pose a huge threat this weekend. So, yeah, they're a really good, tough team, and it'll be a big challenge.
And Dom, how big a deal, what would it mean to you guys as a squad if you could get into the top four, finish, and, you know, reach a Premiership semi-final, but also make the final here in Europe? I mean, it would be a massive, surely, for rugby in the North East.
Yeah, it'd be huge. I think the squad made a big shift last year in the development. I think this year's kicked on brilliantly from there, like top four and the semi-final of the ECC. I think a lot of people would have doubted that at the beginning of the year, but I think we're fully justified to be in that position. And we just need to, you know, finish off the job now, really. Three games of the regular season left, and hopefully three more after that.
Dom, thanks very much indeed for coming on. Really appreciate your time, and good luck for Newcastle this weekend.
Cheers,
right then, you two, your predictions on this one. This is going to be a tight one to call, I think.
Yeah, it is going to be tight. And I guess you would think I would say Newcastle. I actually think it's going to be pretty tough for them this weekend. I think Gloucester might nip this.
I think Newcastle will put together an 80.
For the first time in quite a while.
You have to do it sometime. I think they might do it this time.
You didn't say who's going to win.
Oh, Newcastle.
All right.
She might have got you with that extra time thing again, mightn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Draw.
Right, well, the next semi-final is Cardiff against Poe. That's on Saturday, the 21st of April. And the prospect of a final in Bilbao is definitely an incentive for Poe, according to two of their star names, Conrad Smith and first, Stefan Armitage.
Yeah, definitely like a top of my town, Nigel. I think it's amazing, you know, going away to play in a, I think it's a football stadium, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, opportunity to go play in a different stadium, it's amazing, and it's not too far.
If we can get ourselves to a final, and we know it's in Bilbao, which is
probably would be the closest team to Bilbao, so it'll feel like a home final anyway. But yeah, I mean, I think knowing our supporters, it could be anywhere in Europe and they would get a good crew going over. But the fact that it is, you know, in Bilbao, I think it's been in the back of all of our minds from the start. You know, most of us, I think all of the team would have visited it. It's a beautiful spot. It'll be great for, you know, the city. Like I say, we'd travel everywhere, the supporters. So the fact that it's pretty close, a drive away, then it'll mean there'll be a really good following. And hopefully that'll count for something, you know, if we manage to get there. And yeah, it'll make it extra special, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll just take one game at a time. But yeah, deep down, like at the back of our mind, yeah, we want to be there. And yeah, we do believe we can. But we just got to play our game, first of all.
Conrad Smith, Stefan Armitage talking there. They've got Colin Slade, of course, key coach in Carl Heyman as well. So they've got a rich Kiwi influence there, Tom May. How important do you think that's going to be in a semi-final like this?
Yeah, I think the Kiwis will clearly provide a bit of stardust to their performances. Stefan Armitage is fantastic, performing brilliantly still for Poe. But then you look at the likes of Thomas Domingo and Julien Pierre in the pack, and they've got some real understanding about how to go about winning at the top level of French competition, certainly, and do well in the European competition. So I think it'll serve them well this weekend.
Emma, what about Cardiff? Because they've had a terrific season. They've had some good consistency. They've qualified for Europe next season already. Danny Wilson, I know he's leaving, but it doesn't seem to be having a destabilising effect, does it?
No, it's had the opposite. I think it's really motivated the players. He's obviously keen to leave this club with silverware, the Challenge Cup being that. And they're just week in, week out, they're putting these performances on the park. Their halfbacks are excellent. And their back row as well in that quarterfinal against Edinburgh were ferocious. And Tom just mentioned Stefan Armitage there. That's going to be a real battle. So I think Blues are looking very, very confident. And this is going to be a cracking semi-final.
So, Tom, which way is it going?
Poe lost at the weekend to Brive, and that was at home. So I think their focus is fully on this game. I can see Poe winning this one.
Emma?
I'm finding this one really difficult to call.
Well, Cardiff are at home, and that's bound to play a massive part.
And that's, I was going to revert to that and revert to the stats, because we all love a stat. And of 48 Challenge Cup semi-finals, and some of the matches were over two legs, there have only been 10 wins from away clubs. So I'm going to go with home advantage and say that will get them over the line.
I think Poe did pretty well in their round competition, though. So, you know, they have an ability to go away and win. So that could make it quite interesting.
It's going to be really tight.
Now, we can also announce the details of the pool draw for next season. It's going to be on Wednesday, the 20th of June in Lausanne in Switzerland. And the Challenge Cup draw will be followed by the Champions Cup draw at 2 p.m. BST. That's 3 p.m. CET. And it's going to be streamed live on championscuprugby.com. Right, time for another big name to endure a Champions Cup Q&A. This time it's the man who will lead Munster into battle against Racing. It's their skipper, Peter Omani.
Describe yourself in three words.
I would be a family man. I am passionate, very loyal. There you go.
Which teammate would you want with you if you were stranded on a desert island?
I'd take someone like John Klein. He'd be good at dragging and hauling and building things.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Best piece of advice is to be yourself as much as you can.
What can't you live without?
Red meat.
Which non-rugby sports star would you want on your team?
LeBron James. He'd be handy in the lineup, I'd say, would he?
Who inspired you growing up as a rugby player?
I used to enjoy getting up early to watch John Lomu and that Blues team.
What would your job be if you weren't a rugby player?
Fisherman and Diddley's Catch.
Can you imagine being on a fishing boat with Peter Omani?
No. And I've watched that programme and it's terrifying.
I've never seen that programme.
I want to know what dragging and hauling is.
Well, he does that most days for Munster, doesn't he? Right, next on the EPCR European Rugby Show, I'm going to get owned by Tom May.
I'm Isin Asiwa, and I'll be playing fantasy rugby on championscuprugby.com.
Yes, let's check on our fantasy rugby performance. Well, Nakarawa, Tom May, you'll be glad to know, has been helping me out in bucketfuls. This is where Emma's going to act headmistress because she says I'm not looking after my team properly. Because if you are playing classic fantasy rugby, Emma, this is where you're going to make some points and hopefully make some headway.
Yeah, so there's a few things that you need to keep in mind before the semi-finals. So the first one is the number of players you can have from each team. So you can select up to 6 players from a single team for the semi-finals of the competition. And that's going to rise to 8 for the finals. As always, I'd say pick your captain carefully because his score will be doubled. And this week, you've got 5 changes to play with. But it could be time to use the wild card, which is once in a season, you get a chance to make unlimited changes for free. And then if you're feeling really adventurous, you can activate your team double points, which does what it says on the tin.
So, Mr. Smugface.
So I'm going to absolutely destroy you this weekend
But you've destroyed me already.
Just make it even more embarrassing.
I have changed my captain to Conor Murray, by the way.
It's a good shout.
It's a bit late in the day, isn't it?
No, wow.
How many points do you have? Do you have more than 100 points?
I'm not even going to go down that route. I'm just to say I haven't got very many.
I'm quite inconsistent, though, I realised. So in round 7, which I think was the last round.
The quarterfinals, yeah.
Yeah, I got 90 points, but my highest round score has been 226.
No, I think
which round was that?
I think I got 60 in the last round.
60?
A little bit of catching up to do then.
There
is daily fantasy rugby, remember, James?
Did you have 15 Trandukes?
Oh, very good, very good. Have you been working on that all week, have you?
Wish I had.
It's always a bit too late, isn't it? Now, let's get serious here. There is a Tissot watch for the classic fantasy rugby player whose team scores the most points over semi-finals weekend. You can get all the details at championscupfantasy.epcrugby.com. And Emma, we've already talked about it. There is this daily fantasy rugby. Can you quickly explain how that works?
Yeah, so it's one match day, 7 players on your squad, unlimited budget, the most points you can accumulate on that match day. Plus, don't forget, forwards score more points for tries, so pick them carefully.
And the EPCR Fantasy app is really useful because it makes it easier to play both the classic fantasy rugby and the daily fantasy rugby games. And it's available in French and English via Apple's App Store and Google Play for Android. It's James Burridge, Tom May and Emma Thurston with you on the EPCR European Rugby Show. And a reminder that you can vote now at championscuprugby.com for the European Rugby Player of the Year 2018, presented by Turkish Airlines. Now, the 15 nominees will be cut to a final shortlist of 5 following the semi-finals through a combination of your votes and the views of an expert judging panel.
ChampionsCupRugby.com and our EPCR social media channels will be bringing you that announcement first. Voting is still open, though, to influence that short list of 5, so make sure that your selection counts now.
Now, those nominees include 4 from Leinster: Scott Fardy, Tag Furlong, Eason Asewa and Johnny Sexton.
La Rochelle have 3, Lavani Bhotia, Danny Priso and Victor Vito.
The Clermont pair of Morgan Parra and Aliverti Raka, plus Tad Byrne and Gareth Davis of Scarlets.
Byrne, he tops the turnover stats in the Champions Cup with 16, and Davies is the top try scorer left in the competition.
Last year's winner Owen Farrell of Saracens is also on the list, along with Conor Murray of Munster, the season's offload king Leone Nakarawa of Racing 92, and Josie Tuisova of Toulon. Now, Tom, that's an extensive list. Who sticks out for you there?
I've got 4 names. Am I allowed 4 names or just 1?
We're going to let him have 4.
You can have 4.
I think Eason Asewa and John and Sexton were brilliant for Leinster. I think Gareth Davis has been brilliant for Scarlets all season. But I think Conor Murray might be in with a big shout as Munster.
I think you're being very harsh on Nakarawa. I think he's got to be one of the 4, surely. He's been outstanding through pool stages and that quarterfinal.
To be fair, when you look at the list, it's
tough, I admit it.
Yeah. It's a very, very strong list. Social media, there's a lot of conversation about Conor Murray, particularly about this weekend and him standing out as the player of the whole weekend. So it's a difficult one to choose between. It really is.
So there's 15 nominees worthy of your vote, but who to choose? Here's the view of the Gloucester director of rugby, David Humphreys.
My EPCR European Player of the Year is Lavani Bhotia. We saw him last year stand out for La Rochelle in the Challenge Cup, and he's taken that form all the way into the Champions Cup this year. I'd also pick out Tadhg Furlong from Leinster with my Irish hat on. I think the success in the Champions Cup is built on having a solid set piece, and he's been the outstanding player in that position throughout the course of the competition so far. Another player who's impressed me this year is Leone Nakarawa. I think at the top level, you need players who've got an X factor, who can create something out of nothing, and anybody who's watched Racing this year will know that he's been at the centre of all the magic that they've created.
That's David Humphreys, who was Ulster Rugby's captain when they won the European Cup final back in 1999. Now, he obviously made that selection before the quarterfinals. And don't forget, if you vote at championscuprugby.com, you'll be in the running to win two VIP tickets to the Challenge Cup and Champions Cup finals with one night's accommodation, courtesy of EPCR. The European Rugby Player of the Year 2018, presented by Turkish Airlines, will be announced at the end of the finals weekend. And as we build towards Bilbao and the EPCR European Rugby Show, we're hearing from some of those who've already tasted victory in the Champions Cup. This time, it's Leon Lloyd, who was the match winner for Leicester Tigers when they beat Stade Francais 34-30 in the 2001 showpiece.
I don't remember many matches. It's been a long time since I played, but I remember that one very clearly. We walked out and I thought we were going to do the national anthems because both teams were walking towards each other. I realised there were no national anthems. And then a little scuffle sort of kicked off, and that was them walking towards us. It was like a bit of a face-off, and I thought, wow, we're in for a hell of a 80 minutes. And then we kicked off. One of the things that Jono said to us, you know, we got to silence the crowd, because the crowd was so loud. We just had to silence the crowd, and we just went in, and they kept kicking penalties, and we were, Tim Stimpson was on great form, and sort of levelling it up, and we were just so close throughout the whole first half, just testing each other out. No one wanted to make mistakes. Final was about, yes, scoring tries, it's also about not making mistakes as well. And we went out in that second half, and I was very lucky to get on the end of a great break by Jordan Murphy, and he was struggling in that match, and Paddy Howard passing the ball, and I could see he was struggling. And he was running and he drew the fullback, and he kicked ahead, and it was just a foot race for me, and dot down in the corner. So it was great for me to score a try. But again, Dominguez comes back and kicks, drop goals and penalties, so we're still back in it again. And then not long after that, I went on a bit of a break. Again, the ball floated over the top, and I went on a 30, 40-yard break, and it sort of got into Neil Back's hands, and he scored a try in the corner. So we were 2-0, but Dominguez still kicked penalties and dropped goals, so they still went in it. We're still sort of chasing that gap. So it got really, really tight. We may not have been winning, but we were in control of that match, and we had the ability to score a try if we got that, you know, could put ourselves in the right place. And then it just happened in the last sort of minutes of the game. Austin Healey, having had a pretty quiet game for 79 minutes, he went on a break. He moved to fly half, and I moved out to the wing to accommodate Jordan Murphy going off. He went through the middle on a break, and I thought, knowing Austin, he's definitely not going to pass the ball. He's got a chance to throw a dummy and score in the sticks. But he did. He flew out. He floated out a great pass off his weak hand, and I caught it and dotted down in the corner. And even then, although we were in the lead, we knew that Dominguez, the ability that he had to kick a goal or penalty, I think there's still back in those days, the clock wasn't stopped, it still ran on, so he still had like 2 or 3 minutes left to play. And he could have kicked a penalty from his own goal or a drop goal. The thing I remember about that match was, yes, scoring my second try, which was awesome, but a team game, it's not really about who scores the tries. The thing I remember about that match was the fact that Tim Stimpson stepped up on that right-hand side and kicked a conversion, which meant we were 4 points in the lead. Because if he'd have missed that conversion, which was, you know, one of the toughest places to kick a ball for a right-foot kicker, if he'd have missed that conversion, then Dominguez could have nicked 3 points off us within 2 minutes and probably do that. But he nailed that kick, and it meant we were 4 points in the lead, so they needed to score a try. And as I said before, we are pretty solid in our defence, so we were comfortable. But we couldn't wait for the final whistle to go. Yeah, I've been retired for 10 years, and the thing I miss most about rugby now is those weekends, the European Cup, the Champions Cup weekends, and I think how it's developed from then and how big it is now and how French teams have learned how to travel and learned how to play away from home. And the Irish, you know, Leinster went on and I think they've won it 3 times and Munster have won it twice and Toulon came in and won it a load of times. I think it's just, the standard has just gone up, and I think it's just a great competition to be involved in. That's the bit I miss. Those weekends when I hear that music, I could be in the kitchen or somewhere else and I hear that the theme tune to, you know, the Champions Cup coming on, and they're the ones that I sort of wish that I was putting the boots on one last time. So I think it's great for the sport. I think it's great, and long may it continue. It keeps getting bigger and better, and the teams are improving, and it's just it's the one that everyone wants to win.
He's He's a great talker, Leon Lloyd, isn't he? I remember that final vividly, and I remember the running angle of Leon Lloyd and nobody talking about when he thought Austin Healey was not going to pass the ball.
No, it's one of those finals that they were the sort of early days of this competition that you can remember back to. But, you know, he's right. It's getting bigger and better every year. And it was only probably about 2 weeks ago, I was thinking exactly the same. When you hear the music, there's, you know...
That's put goosebumps on, doesn't
epic.
It?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's things that you...
And you can see it on the players'
that
faces
you
in the
back
tunnel.
To moments. Yeah, you know, this, I'm talking sort of post-career, but when you're still playing, you know, that's certainly focus your mind. But post-career, if there's anything that can flip you back to a moment in time, it's pieces of music or something like that. And I agree with Leon on that point.
Now, before we go, a reminder of what you can see across a wonderful weekend of European rugby on the 20th, 21st and 22nd of April. The weekend kicks off with the first semi-final in the European Rugby Challenge Cup, and it's an all-English affair as Gloucester host Newcastle at 7:45 BST.
Find out which team is the first to book their ticket to Bilbao by watching BT Sport 3 or BN Sports.
Saturday,
Cardiff Blues face Poe at the Arms Park for a place in the Challenge Cup final.
Kickoff is at 1 p.m. local time, and you can see it on Sky Sports Action, FR4 and BN Sports.
Then we focus on the Champions Cup with a last four encounter in Dublin between Leinster and the Scarlets.
It's a 3:30 kickoff at the Aviva on Sky Sports Action and Sky Sports Main Event, as well as BN Sports.
Sunday.
We're in Bordeaux as Racing 92 take on Munster in what promises to be a brilliant semi-final at the Stade Chabon Delmas.
The action from France starts at 4:15 local time, 3:15 BST on FR2, BT Sport 3 and BN Sports.
And that's your weekend sorted. Four massive matches in the semi-finals of the European Rugby Champions Cup and Challenge Cup. Tom, is anyone going to stop Leinster, do you think, overall? And they look as if they have the edge over Scarlets.
Yeah, I think they've got the edge, and I think they're going to be, you know, very, very difficult to beat this weekend. The game I'm looking forward to most, I think, for me, is Racing. Do they have enough to get past Munster, who I think swerved a massive bullet against Toulon? But this is a real opportunity, I think, for Racing to try and stake a claim for Champions Cup glory.
Could be an all-Irish final, Emma.
Wouldn't it be great? But wouldn't it be great to have Scarlets in there as well? Any of the four semi-finalists deserve to be there. Whatever the mix, it's going to be cracking.
Right, that's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Thanks to Mike, James, Leo and Dom. Don't miss those massive semi-final matches. Go to championscuprugby.com for all the news and stats, match highlights and to play fantasy rugby. Keep chatting with us and each other on Twitter at Champions Cup, at ER Challenge Cup or via the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup Facebook pages. Our next episode will be available on Tuesday, May the 8th, when we'll preview Finals Weekend 2018. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston and myself, James Burridge, enjoy the rugby.